KJ News.
I love stories about extremely successful people doing extraordinary things for folks who are less fortunate. And wait until you hear this story.
All right.
Alan Masaryk cycled across the country to raise money for the Center for Family Justice and Empower House. 3,800 miles over 47 days on a bicycle.
That's a lot of pedaling.
Whoa.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice job.
Thank you.
That seat had to hurt after a while.
Yeah. That seat hurt a lot.
Oh, my God. I just look at him like my ass hurts.
I'm surprised he's sitting down right now.
Seriously, but right.
I'm thinking that you'd spend a lot of time getting a high-quality seat.
Well, you know, first of all, thanks for having me on. You know, the ride was it was a bucket list thing that I wanted to do for forever. Matter of fact, I've been married almost 34 years, and my wife remembers me talking about wanting to do this when we were dating.
Wow.
But you do get an opportunity, you know, bring your own seat, your own bike saddle. But
yeah.
After 3,850 miles, it still doesn't matter. So you get good and sore.
How do you prepare? I read somewhere you were preparing for 14 months.
Yeah, I did. I was fortunate that I retired from work a little over a year ago, and it gave me an opportunity to prepare. Initially, I was going to do this last year, and then it was canceled for COVID. And in retrospect, that was a blessing because I wasn't ready.
Wow, wow.
And so it gave me a chance to sort of train for a lot longer.
How do you train? What do you do?
I sort of
a hilly section in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah,
there's
plenty of hills in Connecticut. And so I did, over the course of those 14 months, about 6,800 miles of biking. And I hired a trainer who sort of set my workouts. And then I did a cross training workout, not just the cycling, but also so almost a triathlon type of training, just to do the cross training. So I swam and ran and did weightlifting and things like that, just to make sure that I was ready. Because if you did nothing but cycling, your body tends to break down. So the cross training is really important.
Oh. So that was like a full time job training.
It was pretty much. It was a lot of hours each week. But it made a huge difference because, you know, the challenge when you're sort of, you know, riding almost a century, almost 100 miles on average every day, some days worse than 100 or more than 100, is, you know, you've just got to have that kind of, you know, sort of base level fitness or you're just going to break down.
Right. How do you mentally prepare? That's a big part of it, right?
In distance athletics, mental is a big part, maybe even the biggest piece of it. And I think the key thing is you just, from my perspective, is having a great time with it, is enjoying it. And you know the folks I met on the trip, there were 20 of us who did it. I didn't know anybody. It was organized by Trek, the bike manufacturer. They have a travel group. 20 of us met in Portland, Oregon, and ultimately 18 finished. A couple of people dropped out.
It's a pretty good average,
though. Yeah.
Yeah, there were some really dedicated cyclists who were there.
So, because the mind wants to talk you out of things, so you would have to shut that down, right, as you're going?
Right. And, you just have to enjoy it. And, you know, I always think about long-distance athletics as sort of a metaphor for life. You know, you just kind of put your chin into the wind and just kind of keep going. And you have to focus really on what's in front of you as opposed to, well, I'm tired today, and how the hell am I going to do next week? Well, you can't think about next week. You just got to think about what's in front of you.
Just get to the end of today.
Right. And what was great about the whole thing was also having a mission to do this with. So my wife and I have been involved with Center for Family Justice. She's been involved for many years, and it's just a phenomenal organization. And, you know, you guys have been great supporters of it. Before the ride, it was the Center for Family Justice determined that the current domestic violence safe house, which they're responsible for, which they've had in place for many years, was just completely inadequate.
Not
big enough.
Outdated.
Exactly. And actually, in the sad irony of it is the old domestic violence safe house was in a very unsafe neighborhood.
Wow.
So nothing about it was suitable. And then come COVID, and the incidences of domestic violence just sadly took off.
Right.
So now you had something that was already out of capacity.
Situation got worse.
Exactly.
Yep.
And having to fund people in hotels. It was just a mess. So we put together a program that we branded the Empower House to build a new domestic violence safe house. And we set about a goal to raise $3.5 million to not just build the physical structure, but also to endow it, because having a larger facility was just going to have more operating costs. But it's absolutely necessary simply because of the demands. I've been planning this bike ride for a long time, and I thought, what a great opportunity to combine the two. So we took the notion of Empower House and then branded my ride the Empower Ride.
That's great.
Uh-huh. And so then we pledged money sponsoring each mile of the ride, and then did that as an incremental challenge gift to others to sort of become an Empower Rider, to sponsor miles along this 3,850 miles.
3,850 miles on a bicycle.
Going to Florida and back, yeah.
So we've done well, but we've got a ways to go. We have raised $2.1 million of the $3.5 million goal
through
my ride and other efforts. And there's been a great deal of efforts going on to raise this money. And we're deep into the process, but we've got more, you know, to go. We've raised 2.1 of 3.5. And so what I was trying to do with Empower Ride was to, you know, bring visibility, bring awareness to the problem. Domestic violence, sexual assault, human trafficking, all those related sort of social ills have been here for a long time.
People like to look the other way. That's why I applaud you and your wife for getting involved in this. It's so much sexier to say we're involved in something else that doesn't have the word violence or sexual in it. Good for you.
Well, thanks. I mean, but it's so important, and now it's gotten, you know, like anything, you know, you want to shed light on it. You know, the light is the, you know, is sort of the best way to, you know, bring attention to it. And there was an interesting experience that I had when I was riding. We were in the middle of Wyoming, I think, in literally the middle of nowhere, and stopped for lunch at, you know, this was van supported, so the vans would have lunch, but we happened to stop at sort of a...
I was going to say, you can't be just eating regular food.
No, yeah, McDonald's drive-thru.
Going and having a cheeseburger.
You're eating a lot of peanut butter.
Yeah.
But there was basically a little information booth, if you will, that was, think of it sort of on the side of the highway, because we were on sort of an access road to the interstate. And I went in there, and I was in the restroom, and we're in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming. And I look in the restroom, and there is a flyer about domestic violence resources in the area. And it struck me that, you know, these issues of domestic violence, human trafficking, sexual assault, things like that are everywhere.
Middle of nowhere.
I'm in the middle of nowhere. Exactly. Yeah. And so
probably more cows than people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
100%. And so we're trying to build a facility in Connecticut. It's desperately needed
in
Connecticut.
Where are you going to build it? Bridgeport?
Well, we don't identify the location, but, you know, sort of catchment area.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's correct. So, but it's such a national and international problem, and how you bring awareness to it is so important. And so the Empower Ride was just sort of a small piece of it, I think, that, you know, because everyone's sort of interested, everybody bike rides, and everybody was sort of interested in the whole notion of doing it. And so,
Everyone bike rides.
Yeah, I'm waiting for one that has a Barca lounger.
Me.
Do you?
I love spin class. Love it.
All right.
Yep.
Spin
That's
class, not riding a bicycle.
Oh, no. Yeah. Outside is way harder.
Well, you're right. More of us can relate to cycling than we can to domestic violence, or at least that we're willing to admit.
Yeah. And what we're trying to do here in terms of trying to raise the rest of this money is encouraging everybody, you know, we want to build awareness and encourage everybody to give. You know, again, financial, you know, the sad reality of it is we have to raise money from private sources in order to build this. And so
that is sad,
it's empowerhouseproject.org. Empowerhouseproject.org.
All right, org. Let's make sure we're linked up to that.
Yeah, if you go to that URL, you can donate. And anything and everything is great.
Well, count on Jennifer and I for a donation today.
Thank you so much.
Just listening to your story.
Very kind.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I like about the Center for Family Justice is that it's an umbrella operation. So you walk into this and they have therapists and social workers,
okay,
people who will help you through the process.
All the things you need, yeah.
Attorneys, all of this.
Right.
I remember my mom had some mental issues, and You know, I had to go to the phone booth with a pocket full of quarters and call people. We get to them. They say, oh, you know, you should talk to this person over here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you got to go and call them. This is, you walk in and they got you.
Yeah.
I like how they operate.
They walk you through it.
You know, and along those lines, an important point, if you think about the need for the new safe house, is I mentioned before, the existing safe house was out of capacity in terms of rooms and located in an unsafe area. So when you had to bring, when you wanted to bring those counseling services, legal advice, what have you, they literally were having to shuttle these victims from the safe house over to the main office at the Center for Family Justice. So think about it from typically a woman's perspective, where you're in a situation where you're terrified, and now you've got to leave this building, which already is kind of, you know, not the safest from a neighborhood perspective, and drive, you know, publicly over to now the Center for Family Justice. What we're doing now is, in the facility, not only will we have more bedroom capacity, more family room capacity, but also have offices so that the therapists and, you know, legal services and even, you know, professional services can come in. So you never have to leave those resources. Another thing as well is also, it's very interesting, I learned this through my wife and others, was that we're going to actually have a safe kennel for pets.
Oh, cool. That's so great.
And another one of these things that you never think about, but it's so true, is frequently somebody might not leave an environment that's unsafe for fear that, let's say, the husband's going to take it out on the pet, which happens very often.
Right, you take the dog or cat with you.
That's horrible.
And that's an important point. You're not going to leave unless your pets, obviously your children, but also your pets are safe. So these are just elements of this that are just necessary to solve what is a very difficult but very, very prevalent problem.
Can you imagine?
Right.
Can you imagine? And then you finally get out of this situation and there's not enough room and you got to get in a bus and go, and this is great work.
Yeah,
so
thank you.
Man, that ride, good for you.
The ride was great.
Yeah.
It was a great experience. Met a lot of great friends that I think I'll have the rest of my life. The folks, I didn't know anybody going, but.
Would you do it again?
No.
Yeah. Do your legs kick involuntarily now on occasion?
People ask me that all the time. Would you do it again? I'm going, no, why would I do it again?
Why would I do it again?
Once is enough.
But I loved it. I really, truly loved it. But it's like,
would you do it again?
Check the box. You've got it.
Next will be Cheeseburger Fest.
I jumped out of an airplane, you know, just to address my fear of heights. And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I don't need to do it again.
I like my heights. I'm cool with it.
That's exactly right.
What was the hilliest state?
Ooh.
The toughest hilliest climb, you had to get over the Rockies. So,
oh God,
don't do it. In Wyoming, we came across something called Bighorn Pass. That's what we went across, and so it was the peak was 9,430 feet, because I've got a bunch of pictures at the peak.
Sign.
I like
at
that he
sign.
Does the exact height.
Oh, I know. I know.
There's a reason why.
He felt every inch.
Right. So,
I think I can.
See, my spin bike doesn't move.
Yeah, it doesn't pedal either.
So that was a tough day, because it was, we started, we were about 3,500 feet. So you had 6,000 feet of climbing over about 13 miles. And you're just cranking, slowly just grinding up this hill. But that was a very tough day. Interestingly, a couple of the toughest hill climbing days were here in the East, because we came through Western New York and sort of, you know, we ended in Portland, Maine. And so you're coming, we sort of entered New York over, you know, Corning, New York, came all the way across. And the last town we stayed in was Ticonderoga over on Lake George. And we came across Lake Champlain and crossed into Vermont and went through the Green Mountains. And then that night ended up in Hanover. You cross the Connecticut River and you're up in Hanover, New Hampshire. But that was that was like 100 miles, 7,000 foot day. And you know, we rode from summer into fall. And so that's day was like amazing. 42 degrees and rained the entire day.
Wow.
So
what a joy, huh?
That was a soul-sucking day. And then the next day was basically the same. It just thankfully didn't rain, because that was sort of from Hanover to North Conway, New Hampshire. And then you're going through the White Mountains. So those are tough climbs, because in the East, it's steeper, shorter, but steeper. The West, you know, the West, it's, you know, kind of these winding switchbacks. Yeah.
I looked at your map online, and it looked like you pedaled right across Lake Michigan.
Wasn't easy.
Yeah.
Need the water wings for that one.
That's what everybody
said. You had the water boat.
Little pontoon boat.
Had to pedal really, really fast.
Right. Yeah. Everybody always says, oh, you guys cheated because we ferried across Lake Michigan. So
that's not cheating.
I'd give you a pass.
Yeah, so I'll tell you a funny story. So the ride had 20 people. There was 17 men, 3 women. And one of the women had couldn't ride in a boat. It's like a 2.5-hour ferry ride. She said she gets terribly motion sickness.
Oh.
And the vans that supported us were too tall to go on the ferry. So they had to do the drive around, you know, sort of the southern tip of Lake Michigan, going through Chicago and Gary, Indiana, and come up the other side to Michigan. And so, you know, she was in the van for that and then, you know, met us on the other side. But where we left on the ferry was basically from Milwaukee, and it was 3 miles from the hotel in Milwaukee to the ferry terminal. So we do a long day's ride getting to Milwaukee, and then she went and did the extra 3 miles to get to the ferry terminal and back because she wanted to do every inch.
Oh my
so there's
God.
A whole
God bless her.
There's a whole concept of this whole thing that we refer to as EFI, which is every frickin' inch.
Is it frickin' really?
It is not. It is not.
I didn't think so.
But that was the mindset. You know, you got to do every inch. So it was really cool. And the you know, think about the folks who self-select to do this type of thing. Everybody's kind of type A and type double A, I think, who self-select to do it.
Did you run into any acts of kindness from strangers as you're going through the country?
I thought that, you know, I think that in no specific, I can think of sort of acts of kindness other than everyone.
It's not like people could bake you pies because you're not going to eat a pie. Right.
Right.
I would.
People were always very interested, very supportive. I found that, you know, I didn't even have any problems with cars.
Right. You know, because, you nice. Know, you, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. It really
That's
wasn't a problem.
Dangerous now. Give you a nice
people are burp. Just, I felt like it was comfortable that way. And, yeah, you stop in some of these small towns and you're in the middle of nowhere and having conversations with folks, you just got a big kick out of, you know, tell me again what you're doing. I mean, you know,
yeah,
just,
yeah, yeah.
And, so that was a lot of fun. One of the things that we used to stop at, as if we could find it, was milkshakes. So there's a group of us that rode together all the time. We were going to almost write a book. It's America by Milkshake because, you're just stopping, you know, that's the afternoon right before you get to the hotel, you want a milkshake in the worst way because you cannot physically eat enough in order to, you know, everybody's dropping weight and, you know, just.
How many pounds did you lose?
I only lost about 10 pounds. I put a couple of them back on.
And you were already thin before you left, so that had to be.
Yeah, I guess so.
On windy days, he really moved like lightning. Who's at his back, of course?
Alan Masaryk, co-chair of Empower House, the Center of Family Justice. We're linked up now. Whatever you could give, a couple of bucks, it makes a world of difference for these folks who need it. Thank you for coming in, and great job.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, we look forward to working with you with Center for Family Justice.
That's terrific. You guys have been great. You.